Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you very much for joining us, Stephen St. John. And Jake Gutierrez, Nate Ducati, in Miami right now because he thinks the Kansas-Syracuse game is today.
Right, today at 4:30?
We have yet to tell him it's actually tomorrow, but he'll find out for himself, I'm sure.
Maybe.
Maybe we'll call his hotel later on and find out when he's heading over to the arena.
Right. He's too busy tweeting at Gabe Bearman.
Right. But we're going to start. This is the Border Patrol Blitz and Fast Break.
Both.
Because we're going to talk a little bit of football later on. But right now we start off with basketball and we go to Jesse Newell of the Kansas City Star. Kansas. Good morning, Jesse. How are you?
Doing great, Stephen. How about you?
Doing awesome. I know you're heading down to Miami, where Nate Ducati is waiting patiently for you. And so enjoy hooking up with Nate, because you know he's a party animal on the road. If you're looking to have a good time, but Jesse, let's talk about this game, Syracuse. Based on what you've had a chance to take a look at with Syracuse in getting ready to cover this game, how do they match up with Kansas?
Well, it's an interesting matchup because, you know, Syracuse is always known for that zone defense that they run, but they also play to that with the personnel that they have, you know, the tallest team in the nation according to statistical measures out there. And so it's really tough to score inside, and if you move the ball and share it and get open shots on the perimeter, you know, you can beat them from the outside. So it's kind of an interesting matchup for this particular Kansas team because the length has given KU a problem over time, and we saw earlier this year against Kentucky that length gave KU some problems inside. However, if any team is going to be kind of equipped to take on a team like Syracuse and beat them in the zone that they play, this Kansas team has been able to share the ball and has been able to hit outside shots and step in confidently to outside shots. You would think this Kansas team would be in pretty good shape just because of the way they've shot over the past few games and the way they've been able to fill up with, from the outside with so many shooters, you know, Malik Newman, Devontae Graham, C. McKay, Luke, Gerald Vick, all those guys really filled it up so far. So we'll see if they do the same thing against the Orange.
Now, you wrote yesterday about Azubuike, and basically you say how he could ease his coach's mind and help KU avoid a formula for disaster. Tell people a little bit about what you wrote about the KU big man.
Yeah, if you're looking at what KU has done so far this year, they've had so much success with the four-guard look, but the one big downside to a four-guard look is there's only one big man in the game. And so Bill Self over time has valued, you know, defensive rebounding so much. And he talked about that quote formula for disaster, which is, hey, if Udoka Azubuike, if the biggest big man in the game doesn't rebound well on the defensive end, KU could be in for some problems. So it hasn't cost KU so far this year. You know, Udoka Azubuike, he doesn't really have a mindset to go out and get every single defensive rebound like some of the past big men have had for KU. Landon Lucas had that mindset. You know, he loved doing the dirty work. He loved boxing guys out. Right now, from a percentage standpoint, Udoka is only fourth on the team in defensive rebounding. So you're looking at Syracuse, the number one offensive rebounding team in the nation, the tallest team in the nation. If ever KU needs Udoka to show up and really be a dominant force on the boards, which he can be at 7 foot, 280 pounds, this is the game KU really needs it. So we'll see if Udoka kind of steps into that role, embraces it more, and kind of plays more to his size because he has rebounding potential. He just kind of has to buy into that.
What any new information or anything that you've heard on Billy Preston?
Yeah, Bill Self talked a little bit yesterday at the press conference about him, saying no new news, but it sounds like things are starting to kind of get a little bit closer to a conclusion. You know, it seems like with this whole process, what's happening is KU's compliance department has investigated what's going on with the Billy Preston situation, and at some point they're going to come up with kind of a final report, and you would assume that would go the NCAA, and they would send it along and then see how the NCAA wants to proceed from there and kind of share what they've learned. So it's pretty obvious at this point that the financial situation with Billy Preston's car was not a simple matter. It's taken a few weeks to kind of sort through and figure out what's gone on there. But at least from what Bill Self was saying publicly yesterday, he just said that it seems like it's getting closer to some sort of conclusion, or that the compliance department might be wrapping up what it's found with the Billy Preston situation. So one way or the other, it sounds like there might be more news coming up soon, but as of right now, Billy Preston not available for Kansas, and probably won't be against Syracuse and Miami. It's still kind of a wait and see deal.
What's your gut tell you about the situation?
You know, it's tough to kind of say a gut call on this thing because so many things can be different when it comes to these sort of rules and compliance. And you know, I think the most, you know, you think about Josh Selby a few years back, he had kind of an impermissible benefits thing. He sat out 9 games and was able to play later on in the season. So that might be the most, we don't know if these things are similar but just kind of based on that, maybe this is something that Billy Preston can play later in the season if it's just, you know, a suspension that KU gives to him and then the NCAA sort of approves. But I don't know. It's really tough to make a gut call on this just with so little information out there and not knowing exactly what's been found on this vehicle. So I really do. I would love to give you an answer. I'd love to tell you, hey, he's going to be back for this day, or he won't be back at all, or he's going to have to pursue other options, or whatever the case may be. But I think there's just enough up in the air right now that it would almost be irresponsible to make a guess, just because I don't think anybody knows at this point.
All right, let's wrap it up again with Syracuse. And so what do you expect to happen? What's your prediction? How tough of a test this might be for Kansas, or will it be?
Well, I think that this isn't a Syracuse team that maybe is what people perceive it to be. You know, sometimes they've been top 20, top 25. They really haven't played. They've been 6-0 this year, but have played some close games against teams that KU has blown out. So I think this is a game KU should win, you know, double digits range. But again, I think so much of it goes back to, can KU shoot it well? And the big question for the Jayhawks right now is just that they've shot it so well at home. I mean, Allen Fieldhouse, they just shot amazing. It seems like everything's going in. And the one-off shooting night was the game in Chicago at the United Center. So this is KU's second game away from home. It's going to be in Miami, different rims, different atmosphere, all those sorts of things. Can KU shooting go on the road and still be good? Because, again, KU's going to have to make threes to beat Syracuse. You're going to have to move it around, get it inside the zone, pop it back out, and have those guys make threes. But if that happens, I could see KU winning this game pretty easily, and I think that the Jacks should be able to do that and improve to 7-0.
Jake wants me to ask you if you think this actually has a chance to be Bill Self's best shooting team, or is this just a product of level of competition so far?
Yeah, I've kind of written this. I think it might be his best shooting team, and what makes this offense so dangerous is just that if you leave any of them on the perimeter, they can make a three. Again, other than Udoka Azubuike, who's roaming around inside with so much space because there's four guards. And again, if somebody double teams him, it's just a simple pass to the outside and they can get it to those guys' hands. The one guy who really hasn't shot it that well is Devontae Graham from the perimeter. And again, we know that he can shoot the ball. And again, Ladero Vick is over 50% from three. Steve Mikhailuk's over 50% from three. Malik Newman is at 50% from three. So just the way the team has shot it so far, it makes it very difficult for opposing coaches to figure out what you want to stop. Last game against Toledo, they decided to not leave any shooters and not let KU shoot threes, and KU just continued to drive to the rim and get easy points, and got easy points that way. Devontae Graham had 35, so it's really a pick-your-poison with Kansas right now. This might be the best shooting team of the Bill Self era, and that's showing with the numbers they put up so far.
You can listen to Kansas and Syracuse tomorrow at 4:30 right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, and check out Jesse Newell and his coverage at kcstar.com, and also you can follow Jesse on Twitter. At Jesse Newell is his handle. Jesse, have a safe trip down to Miami. Thank you very much for the time.
All right. Thanks, Stephen.
That is Jesse Newell, who I'm sure will be seeking out Nate Bucati, as everyone. Anyone heading down to Miami, please keep an eye out for Nate, because he is already MIA.
Right.
In MIA. You like that? Wow.
Whoa.
Mind blown.
Whoa.
Just in time.
That's why you're so good.
For Stan Weber.
Kansas State.
Hello, Stan. How are you?
Great, Stephen. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Stan Weber, I will give you the opportunity to tell me, if you had your choice, what bowl game would Kansas State go to?
Wow, that's a great question. I don't think there's a high preference, because you look at matchups, timing. Certain bowls are on December 26th, which is not optimal for the K-State fans. For instance, Arizona, if you went down there to the Cactus Bowl, it's a good place to go. Play Oregon or UCLA, someone like that, would be a lot of fun. Liberty Bowl, it's a little later in the week on Friday, 11:30 in the morning, and maybe Mizzou will be waiting there. So that would be a lot of fun as well. So, you know, having a chance to go there, and I think it'd be a big crowd. You know, but K-State's been there recently. You know, it'd be kind of nice if TCU was able to hold on and become one of the top 11 or 12 teams. There's a question if they need to be 11 or 12 team in the final college football playoff poll. But if they are, they go to the New Year's Six. And that would mean that TCU and Oklahoma, that doesn't mean TCU has to win. It just means can they stay in the rankings at that level. But if they both do, then that means OSU can go to the Alamo Bowl, and the bowl in Orlando, Florida becomes open for somebody. And then there's a big-time choice between West Virginia that's on the East Coast. Obviously, Iowa State has had a good season, but K-State's beaten Iowa State, or Texas. All four of those teams are really interchangeable about who could be selected. So it'd be fun to go to Orlando and see TCU and Oklahoma up there in the New Year's Six. So really, I've given you, three real good choices. Orlando, Liberty Bowl against an SEC team, maybe Mizzou, or out to Arizona, all very good. I'm just glad K-State's 7-5 because it's been a wild ride the last 2 weeks, Stephen.
And so, and you know what? I was excited about the possibility of Mizzou going to the Liberty Bowl because I might actually consider driving down there with my family because I'm off that week, and we'd like to go to Memphis. But here's the deal with that. With 9 bowl-eligible teams in the SEC this year, there's a good chance only 5 teams are available for the pool of 6. That happens if the playoff rotation games snatch up 3 SEC teams in Georgia, Auburn, and Alabama, and there's protocol in place for that occasion. SEC doesn't talk about it, but if there's only 5 teams available for the pool of 6, the Liberty Bowl is out of the running, and there would be no SEC team there. So if that happens, then there would be no Mizzou and no SEC team for the Liberty Bowl, and they probably go to the Texas Bowl or the Belk Bowl. So it sounds like
that's a good point because you're talking about the same thing, Stephen. If you're those 3 teams are going to finish in the top 11, and therefore they're not going to be going to SEC bowls, they're going to be going to the New Year's Six. And so it's a little bit sad that maybe Iowa State versus Missouri or K-State Missouri isn't going to happen at the Liberty Bowl, but it goes back to where are the teams ranked, and the upper teams are pulled out of the sequencing. So you're right. I have studied that a little bit, but I've just got my old hope up. Wouldn't it be great if Missouri played a Big 12 team in the Liberty Bowl?
Oh, I'd love it, and you know, the attendance would be great, but I think maybe it could be, if they're going to play a Big 12 team, it could be Texas in the Texas Bowl. We'll see how that pans out. But either way, just good to talk about Missouri and Kansas State. Considering where they were a couple of weeks ago, it was up in the air. They're both going to be going to bowl games, both finishing very strong. And so I want to ask you about, and boy, did I enjoy listening to you and how happy you were when Skylar Thompson threw that game-winning touchdown pass. But one of the most exciting plays of the year, throwing the game-winning touchdown pass with no time on the clock. And you still got a bowl game ahead of you, but it's hard not to be excited if you're a K-State fan thinking about what this kid could turn into by the time he's done at Kansas State, right?
Absolutely. And I've thought that all along from when I studied him at Fort Osage, what he did in the state championship game, running and passing and dominating over in the Dome in St. Louis. And just throughout the whole season, what I studied of him, what I heard about him, I'm not big on the recruiting stuff. I don't necessarily think it always projects out to play out who the best players are in college. It's really hard, so especially in football. So I said, I'm going to be careful about this, but everyone I met in Kansas City who knows him, who's been around him his whole life, I mean, every indication was thumbs up and all the things that I think are important, the integrity, the hard work, winning, making winning plays, not just being a good player, but making winning plays. And that's what Skylar Thompson has been about his whole life. And then when he went to K-State and went over there early, obviously got an indication from the coaching staff and other players. And, heck, my son's on the football team. And so when I can ask about certain players, like, what do you think about a Skylar Thompson, it is glowing about the leadership and the way they believe in this kid. And that's before he even played one down for K-State. Now that he's proven it on the field, they're going to jump behind him. So, yeah, the future is bright because K-State football is good, but it has a chance to be great if everyone ups their game a little bit. And it usually takes a person to pull them along, a player who's really good and a great leader to do that. And when Colin Klein did that for K-State, the Wildcats were very good in 11 and then winning the Big 12 championship in 2012. And this is a Colin Klein type of player, someone who can put the team on his back, but more importantly, just makes everyone feel good around the team. So every offensive player, if no one turns pro, we'll be back and eligible next year, including Skyler. So I'm really happy for him. I'm sad that Jesse Ertz wasn't able to finish off the season. He was a very good quarterback, too. I mean, he had a lot of the same qualities that Skyler has. But a Kansas City kid leading K-State, it's a lot of fun, and the future is bright. And I'm glad they get to practice for a while and get to play a bowl game. And I thought that play was exciting when I first saw it. That may be an understatement, Stephen. You may have heard me.
I heard you.
I went back and watched the replay a few times, and I think I'm even more nervous about watching the replay. Like, he rolled to his left, and how did he not run into the tackler and end the play there before he spun back to the right? So it was amazing in every aspect, and hopefully I captured that for those that were listening on the radio.
Finally, Stan, for the basketball squad, in Vegas, they almost beat a really good Arizona State team. They got a win over George Washington. And since then, they beat Oral Roberts. Now a road game on Sunday afternoon at Vanderbilt. What do you expect?
Well, it's a big question mark, Stephen. We just mentioned Skylar Thompson, and one thing that I mentioned with emphasis is not only should you be a good player, but can you make the winning plays? And K-State, I think, has good players on their basketball team. Those sophomores, those three guys that ended up turning into juniors this year, are doing a good job. They're good players. Xavier Sneed coming on, he is a good player. So K-State has the components, but the question mark, when you go back and look at that Arizona State game, for instance, is can you make the winning plays down at the end? And that's still a question mark for this group of guys. Who can do it? Can they do it? And when you go on the road, it's a little bit hard to evaluate these two teams because K-State had some success against Arizona State but couldn't make a winning play away from home. They didn't play well against ORU. Now they're going out on the road. Last year when they went to Tennessee for a non-conference game, it ended up being a dud. The Wildcats didn't show up and play well. If K-State plays well, I think they're the better team, but it's hard to get your arms around Bryce Drew's team at Vanderbilt because they've had such a tough schedule. They played USC, Virginia, and Seton Hall in three straight games. I mean, that's three ranked teams in a row. Yeah, they didn't win them, but they went to overtime against number 10 USC. So this team's dangerous enough. They got some veteran players. Their three leading scorers, the double-digit guys for Vanderbilt, are all seniors. So, and it's a weird place to play. You know how the coaches are in the end zone rather than on the sideline? So it just is a different atmosphere playing at Vanderbilt. We'll see. I think K-State's the better team if they bring it. But if K-State lets down at all being on the road, it's just tough enough that it could be either a very close game, and we'll see who wins it at the end, or even a loss. It's all up in the air. Big game for K-State on Sunday.
Stan, thank you for the time. We appreciate it.
Okay, Stephen, have a great weekend.
You do the same thing. That is to Stan Weber. Now let's move on to Alex Schiffer with the Kansas City Star.
Missouri.
You could follow him on Twitter. The Schiff Man is his handle. Alex, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, St. John Tay. How you doing, man?
Doing very well. Thank you very much for coming on the show with us. And yes, the nightmare is over. 36 straight road losses. The streak finally ends last night as Missouri gets a win over UCF on the road, and it wasn't easy down the stretch. And I think anyone that was watching that watched that West Virginia game, it was different. You know, there's no press Virginia or anything to deal with, but when they hit that three-pointer at the end of the shot clock and things started falling for them, there were some nervous times, but Mizzou got it done. How big of a step was that for Konzo Martin his first year to finally end that 36-game road losing streak?
I think it was big. I mean, a lot of these guys that played under Kim Anderson, you know, were used to kind of losing on the road, and I think this is a big turning point for that in the sense of, this isn't going to be a thing anymore. You know, we're going to go on the road and expect to come out with some wins. So I think for especially the guys that have kind of just been at the heart of that streak and hadn't won a road game in their career, I think that was huge just for them individually too.
It was a big deal, and so Mizzou wins last night against UCF. And now they could get past that. No more questions about that. But there will continue to be questions about Michael Porter Jr., courtesy of his Instagram account. Well, man, what's your take on all this? Do you think it's silly for Mizzou fans to hold out hope that he could possibly play again this year? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of false hope for sure because, you know, he does that on a Sunday right before his team that he's not with is about to play a huge game against West Virginia. And Konzo Martin had just said that Friday earlier that the team just is figuring out how to win without him and that their performances against Utah and Emporia State were affected by the uncertainty of his injury. So So I thought that wasn't a good look for him, especially right before Steam has a big game. But I don't know, you know, Steve, we're talking about rushing back or coming back from back surgery. I mean, it's not a rolled ankle or a muscle tweak. So if I was a betting man, I'd say I don't think he comes back, but it's going to be interesting, especially as he gets closer to that targeted return date with how Mizzou's playing and how they look for a tournament spot if there's a chance he does come back and pulls like a Kyrie Irving.
So the biggest question, and you mentioned how is Missouri going to be playing? Where will they be? Will they be considered a tournament team at that point in February? A lot of that is going to be based on what happens with this point guard situation. I think it's been interesting to watch how Konzo Martin has handled the point guard situation. Last night down the stretch, Terrence Phillips hit two big shots. He banked in a three, but then hit a nice jump shot that gave Missouri a nice a cushion that they needed to win the game down the stretch. What do you make of the point guard situation right now for Mizzou?
It's interesting. You know, when Courtney Ramey out of St. Louis had decommitted from Louisville, I didn't expect them to touch him just because they had three guys coming back on the roster for next year. And now you can see why they need him so bad. I mean, Jordan Geist has been tremendous. I was down in Orlando for the Advocate Invitational Tournament last week. I was talking to some people, and I said, I don't know if Mizzou's had a guy that has had his role change so dramatically in such a short time. Blake Harris is starting, but he's not really playing starter minutes. You know, Konzo put him out there against Long Beach State. He looks great. He had 11 points, 9 assists, 1 turnover. And then against St. John's and West Virginia, it was more Jordan Geist and Terrence Phillips that were in crunch time. So I think he wants Blake to win the job over, but he's not where he wants him to be. If you saw, there was a video on Twitter posted after the win against St. John's where Konzo says it can't be all about Blake. And that kind of made me, when I was posted on the team's Twitter account, it kind of made me wonder if he's in the doghouse a little bit or something. But they have all these games coming up against these, you know, low major teams before the bragging rights game. I wonder if Blake gets an extended look at point guard, and this is going to be, these next 2-3 weeks are going to be his chance to kind of solidify himself at the position before conference play.
All right, let's move on and talk a little Mizzou football. We will find out on Sunday, and maybe the week before then, where the Tigers are going to be heading for their bowl game. Now, a lot of people around here were hoping that Mizzou would end up in the Liberty Bowl for a number of reasons. And I'll be honest with you, I'd seriously consider driving down to the Liberty Bowl to watch because of the timing and the proximity, and I think it would be a great turnout for Mizzou fans, and perhaps they could play K-State there. But because of the way that the selection process goes, a lot of people don't realize that it looks like maybe there won't be an SEC team in the Liberty Bowl. And so based on that, and you could touch on that if you want, but based on what you know, maybe what are the likely destinations for Mizzou for their bowl game?
Yeah, I'm not going to go too into the selection process just because it's too long to explain. You kind of hit the nail on the head of just there's not enough bowl-eligible SEC teams to where it looks like the Liberty Bowl is the odd man out. The three that I would be comfortable saying they have a shot at going to is the Texas Bowl against Texas, the Taxpayer Bowl in Jacksonville, Florida against Iowa, and the Belk Bowl in North Carolina against North Carolina State. Those are my three best educated guesses for where they wind up. And obviously, I think the Liberty Bowl would have been a great matchup just in terms of location and whoever they'd be playing because it'd be a Big 12 opponent. And the Texas Bowl, I think, would look pretty good if they got Texas just because they're, if you remember the Texas AP had said about years are better than Missouri's good years, and it's an old Big 12 team. Some Tom Herman stuff with same coaching search as Barry Odom. There'd be some storylines there. A lot of people have asked me about the Music City Bowl. I think Missouri would take it if they got it for sure, but I think there's too many other teams on the City Bowl's radar.
Based on those, I mean, I said at the beginning, if I could pick the opponent for Missouri, I want Texas. And they do. It might be tough for fans to get down there to Houston, but they do recruit Texas. It might help with recruiting and some other things. For Missouri, what do you think is the best of those scenarios you laid out? What's best for the program? What do you think Missouri is hoping for?
I would say the Texas Bowl, kind of because of what you said. You know, they have a big alumni base in Texas. They do recruit down there. I think in terms of storylines for us, the media, you know, I said with the AD quote and with Tom Herman, you know, I can't really think off the top of my head of any storylines of them playing like an NC State or an Iowa. I mean, those are good teams. They'd be good games, but, you know, there's not like an extra juice with it like Texas would present. I think for sure the Texas Bowl is what they'd be aiming for. If not, Music City, because they have a big alumni base in Nashville, and I think they'd eat, you know, Missouri always travels well to the Vanderbilt games. So I think they would easily sell out the ticket allotment for that. And then after that, I mean, I think it's a take your pick between the Tax Slayer and the Belk Bowl. That's, I think they'd absolutely get people to there, but it just, again, it doesn't have the same appeal as Texas.
My final question for you, Alex. Six wins in a row, going to a bowl game. Drew Lock played terrific football, leads the nation in touchdown passes, broke the SEC record. All these terrific things happening. Barry Odom, do you think he will get an extension this offseason? Do you think that should happen for Missouri?
It really kind of has to happen. You know, he has 3 years left on his deal. In terms of recruiting, it's tough to kind of sell a kid on coming to play for you when you can't prove on paper that you're going to be there for the next 4 years throughout their 5 years if they redshirt for their entire career, assuming he keeps winning. So he kind of needs a contract extension just to recruit this current class and then the next class, 2019. But he kind of needs an extension if he wants to make his sales pitch a lot stronger. So I'd be stunned if he doesn't get extended. I'm not sure how long it would be. My guess is 5 years, but I think he needs an extension just based off recruiting and how it all works.
Alex, I appreciate the time. We'll look forward to finding out what happens on Sunday when we'll find out for sure when what Missouri bowl game we'll be looking forward to. But I would appreciate your time. We'll have you on the show again real soon, man.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, Steve.
Appreciate that. That is Alex Schiffer, who does a great job as one of the new beat writers, along with Aaron Reese, who was down covering the game, the basketball game down in Central Florida. Really, really good hires for the Kansas City Star, and I had a chance to sit down with both of those guys at a recent Tiger Club event and do a panel discussion. And
that's a good debut. It's a good debut for
me.
Him. No, not for you.
Well, I'm looking for a good debut.
No, dude, your prime was about 15 years ago, bro.
I don't know that I had a prime.
You did. You did.
I missed it.
I remember it.
Was it good?
Yeah, it was. It was awesome to watch. So I was glad to be a part of it.
Great then.
Yeah.
Thanks.
No, it's like right, probably the, you know, right in the middle of Sopranos.
Oh, that was my.
That was
my
your peak, dude.
Oh man,
I'm thinking like 04 ish.
Okay. That's when I really hit my stride.
Yeah, that's when you were taking off.
Been a downhill
and now
trajectory
we're,
ever yep, since.
And
so that was Alex.
Bringing me with you.
that was Alex Schiffer, the Schiff Man on Twitter, if you want to follow him, beat writer for Mizzou for the Kansas City Star. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.